Because you are a visionary, you see and you experience the world differently. And because you see and experience the world differently, you are a creative. And because you are a creative, you refusing to fit in by standing out with your queer message, passion and purpose, and having this amazing opportunity to create new, better rules, better norms, better beliefs, better external world. And that's why your queerness is a gift, because you have that amazing, beautiful opportunity to make a change in this world. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Wellbeing Inquiries podcast. And today's episode is gonna be quite personal, since I'll be talking about something that I am very passionate about and probably tackling loads of pet peeves of mine. So just wanted to drop that caution statement before we jump into this episode. And I know I have been away for some time and haven't dropped any new episodes since the end of July, I believe. And that is because I have spent this time on my own development, professional, personal, and spiritual alike. And I literally went down the rabbit hole and did tons of reading, learning, getting coached, finding a mentor, doing lots of self-discovery work, getting clarity on my beliefs, values, what I stand for, what change I want to create in this world, what's really my deeper purpose in this life, and, you know, tons of other amazing stuff which are probably too many to mention for this episode. And during that time, I came to many realizations which have shifted my perspectives on things I have been indoctrinated into since I was a kid, especially in the areas of personal and spiritual beliefs. And you see, I am still going through that transformation, but this transformation, this process of change, has no end. And this is one of the biggest realizations I had. And many of you might think that a transformation or a change has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Well, it does, if you think of it in finite terms. You set a goal, you set the rules, you set the time, you do the work, you achieve the goal or not, you win or lose, and then you go home either with a trophy or trash-talking yourself. In the corporate world, and those of you who work or used to work in the corporate world, this will sound very familiar, and it's called KPIs. A transformation or a change is what I like to call an infinite game, a term I have quote-unquote borrowed from Simon Sinek's book entitled, well, The Infinite Game. The book is really about leadership. However, I believe that this concept of an infinite game can be truly adopted in any area of our lives. So this is what Simon has in mind when talking about finite and infinite games. Finite games like football or chess have known players, fixed rules, and a clear endpoint. The winners and losers are easily identified. In infinite games like business or politics or life itself, the players come and go, the rules are changeable, and there is no defined endpoint. There are no winners or losers in an infinite game. There is only ahead and behind. Those of us who adopt an infinite mindset build stronger, more innovative, and inspiring teams, organizations, careers, and lives. Ultimately, those who live with an infinite mindset are the ones who lead the rest of us into the future. So the way I see it is that those with an infinite mindset are visionaries. Their minds are not limited by what already exists. They see and experience the world differently. They are creatives. They break the status quo, they go against the grain, they shift perspectives and create a future other people don't even see possible. And this kind of infinite mindset, being a visionary, because you see and experience the world differently, is the essence of being a queer visionary that goes beyond just identity. And this is what I really wanted to talk to you about today. So let's dive in. the word queer is a multifaceted word, and it's used in different situations in different ways, and it also means different thing to different people. Now, society and even our own LGBTQ plus community see the word queer as either a noun or an adjective aside of an identity. And queer means basically attracted to people of many genders, not only the two, let's call them biological genders, men and women. It also means that we're not fitting the cultural norms around sexuality and or gender identity or expression. Queer also means that somebody simply is non-heterosexual, and that basically covers the pool of all the identities gathered under the umbrella of our LGBTQ plus community name. Or queer also sometimes means transgressive or challenging a status quo, going against the grain and breaking outdated norms and rules that have been created by the heteronormative society. And I believe it's time, it's really time, this is the time that we move toward the latter and start seeing queerness or being a queer as a verb. And I really like the definition the Reverend Patrick Chang used in his book called Radical Love. And this is how he explains how he understands the word queer, or how he sees the meaning behind of a word queer. The second meaning of quote-unquote queer is a self-conscious embrace of all that is transgressive of societal norms, particularly in the context of sexuality and gender identity. In fact, this term is best understood as a verb or an action. That is, to quote-unquote queer something is to engage with methodology that challenges and disrupts the status quo. Like the function of the court jester or the subversive traditions of Mardi Gras, to quote-unquote queer something is to turn convention and authority on its head. It is about seeing things in a different light and reclaiming voices and sources that previously had been ignored, silenced, or discarded. And that's why queerness is a gift. That's why queerness is a gift. That's why being queer goes really beyond just identity. It's no longer a noun, it's no longer an adjective, but it's really a verb. And I'm gonna be sharing with you in this episode different stories, and we'll be giving you different examples to really support my thought around that and why I believe that our queerness or your queerness is really a gift. And we should be moving toward understanding of the word queer as a verb, as really taking an action. So just to give you a couple of examples. And to start with, let me tell you a story very, very briefly about who was really behind the March on Washington that took place on August 28, 1963. Because many people associate the March on Washington with what has turned out to be the most important and most significant event that started the civil rights movement in America, with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his iconic I Have a Dream speech. But very few people until now talk about Bayard Rustin, the civil rights pioneer who was behind the March on Washington. For decades before the march, Rustin had been organizing protests, marches, and sit-ins, spreading the gospel of nonviolent resistance long before Dr. King came on the national stage. And the beautiful part of this is Bayard Rustin was gay, was black gay. So no wonder at that time he was a very easy target. He was a socialist, he was a pacifist who'd refused to fight in World War II and even went to prison for it. And basically he was a gay black man at the time of intense homophobia. And he is truly the one behind the March on Washington. And Bayard Rustin was really the sum of many, sometimes contradictory parts. And while his contributions are often overlooked, he was instrumental in the movement and the architect of one of the most influential protests in American history. And in a way, that was his greatest gift, the ability to imagine a different world and rally everyday people to build that world with him. And I want to underline the last sentence, that in a way, that was his greatest gift, the ability to imagine a different world and rally everyday people to build that world with him. So his queerness, him being gay, him being queer, his queerness was his gift because he saw the world, he experienced the world differently, in a completely different light. He knew that he was able to create the change. He knew that he could better the world. So his queerness was truly a gift. And let me quote to you right now Father Shannon Kearns, who beautifully once wrote that we bring new understandings to what it means to be family, to what commitment looks like, and to how to care for your community and neighbor. We bring new understanding to the fight for justice and how to get what you need when the government doesn't care about you. And to give an example from our own LGBT community, proving that our queerness is truly a gift and we see beyond standard rules and norms that heteronormative society created, especially in the times of crisis or when we see our governments really condemning us or not even supporting us, is at the time when back in 1980s, when the AIDS epidemic hit. And this is the time when the lesbian and gay communities put their differences aside and created a level of solidarity that didn't exist before and stood side by side fighting the disease. So lesbians stood by their gay brothers, whether as care providers for the sick or lobbying in Washington for just policies. And lesbians also donated blood for gay men in the 1980s when gay men themselves were prevented from doing so. They also navigated the healthcare system and they even organized to provide food, clothing, and even housing. And truly, that relationship between gay men and lesbians evolved from there, because gay men themselves increasingly started to recognize the role lesbians had played in mitigating the HIV/AIDS crisis. I've recorded a full episode around how our LGBT community has become to be known as such several episodes back. So if you're interested, you can always listen after listening to this episode. But let's just go back to the topic. So as you can see, our queerness, or us being queers, is truly a gift because we know how to think differently, how to think outside the box. We know how to really take care of ourselves, how to create families that are really supportive, that are really welcoming and affirming. But I believe that there is something that we still need to tackle as community, and even more as queers, because I know that there is a certain belief that our LGBT community still holds true. And that belief is, well, I am just like you. Okay, I am gay, but I am just like you. I'm a normal gal who loves women, but I am no different than you. And how often many of you have said that to maybe your heteronormative friends, or maybe to your parents, or maybe to your classmates, maybe even to your teacher, maybe even in your church, or maybe even to your priest. I'm no different than you. I'm just like you. I'm just gay. I'm just queer. I'm just trans. I'm just lesbian. But I want the same. I deserve the same rights. I breathe the same air. I'm really no different. We are the same. How many of you have said that? Now, the way I look at that is, we probably need to look at a more deeper level into this kind of thinking, as I say, or this kind of belief. Because to me, saying, I'm just like you, I'm no different, I'm just gay, is more of asking for approval while trading in your authenticity in order to fit in order to be accepted, in order to not be rejected. There is one thing that we also need to tackle, and I probably will record a separate episode on that, is what authenticity truly is. Many people, and many of you, can probably think or believe that being authentic is being who you are, who you truly are. Now, my question to you is this really just I am who I am, or you are who you are, and that's why you're authentic? The way I look at authenticity comes out from your identities, not only a single identity, being a queer, being gay, being lesbian, being trans, asexual, gender fluid. It's beyond that. All of us carry different identities. Our sexual identity or sexual orientation is not only one thing that describes us. Our authenticity comes from multiple identities. And these identities can be, I'm gay, I'm queer, I'm Christian, I'm European, I'm American, I'm Asian, I'm traditional, I am authenticity manifester, etc., etc. Now, all of these identities really stem out from our set of values, our core values that we hold true and sacred into our life. So I don't want to digress more from the topics. It's probably good. It's probably a good idea for me to record a separate episode of that, but let's just quickly go back. So saying I'm normal, I'm just like you, but I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm queer, has another layer underneath on the, or beneath what we really say to other people, because this is really hustling for approval while training in authenticity. And that kind of hustle for approval is, I think, based, or is really about, fear of judgment. Because when I say I'm just like you, I'm a normal guy or a normal girl, I'm just gay, what we are saying is that, you know what, I'm not so different than you are, and I deserve to be accepted. I deserve to have the same rights. I deserve to not be hated, because if I'm not, that's the biggest fear I have. I'm afraid that I'm gonna be rejected. So I think it's really about fear of judgment. When we look at fear and judgment as two separate statements or nouns, they're quite interesting, because what fear really is. Now, there are only two things that we are afraid in our life. One is fear of falling, and second one is fear of loud noises. Any other fears that we have, they have been indoctrinated into us either by society or by culture or by our parents. Now, judgment is truly just an opinion. An opinion is point of view, not necessarily always to be 100% true of all the time. So it's subjective. An opinion is also a perspective that can be shifted by showing there are always alternative ways of looking at things, even if people believe that the alternative ways or none are existing. Shifting our perspective is also helping us ending whatever kind of suffering, and allowing people to snap out of it and creating a world they didn't think was possible. So our belief, I am just like you, I'm just gay, I'm just like you, is truly hustling for approval, but that's rooted in a fear of judgment. Let me ask you a question. How many of you had performance review at work, and you walked in, you had your review, and the next day, regardless of what was said, you showed up and continued coming to work? Probably all of you have done that. I have done that many times. Or how many of you have gone to school and have taken a test and you knew that the teacher was literally judging you based on your answers, but you continue to show up to school every single day. So you have clearly done things inside of your life while being judged and haven't even thought about it. So why are you letting judgment or fear of judgment stop you from celebrating your queerness, from sharing your queerness with the world, from making a change in this world, from seeing and experiencing the world differently? Because you can clearly handle judgment. And in fact, some of the best visionaries, even queer visionaries in the world, are the ones who have already realized that it's more powerful to focus on who you can help versus focusing on yourself only. And they have identified how selfish it is to put your own concerns over everyone else you can help in the world. So this is not really about apologetics or convincing the heteronormative society that we belong, that we are worthy, that we are the same and deserve the same rights, or convincing ourselves that we fit in. Now, all of that is important, don't get me wrong, and all of it has its own rightful place. But it's about something different. It's about focusing on the positive contributions. Because being different means you are a visionary. Because you are a visionary, you see and you experience the world differently. And because you see and experience the world differently, you are a creative. And because you are a creative, you refusing to fit in by standing out with your queer message, passion, and purpose, and having this amazing opportunity to create new, better rules, better norms, better beliefs, better external world. And that's why your queerness is a gift, because you have that amazing, beautiful opportunity to make a change in this world, to show the heteronormative world what you see and tell them what I see you have to see as well, because it makes us better. And that's why your queerness is a gift. And we've seen queers throughout the ages really standing out and taking their queerness to the next level and creating this amazing change in the world and in their time that influenced people and queers after they have been gone. And we can literally go back to the ancient time and start with Sappho, Bessie Smith, Michelangelo, Gertrude Stein, fashion designers such as Calvin Klein, Marc Jacobs, Gianni Versace, and so on and so forth. Now, they all have one thing in common. They saw the world as a creative place. They knew how they could alter it. They saw where things were open to interpretation, and they explored how they could make something more beautiful or more comfortable. They saw their queerness as a gift, and they shared that gift with the world and changed the world for the better. Next thing I want to talk to you about is going to be very personal, and it might make you feel uncomfortable. And if it does, so it's okay for you to stop listening. No hard feelings, gorgeous. I truly understand. Now, I was raised in a very religious Roman Catholic household. My faith, my religion, and my spirituality were always important to me. But with time, things have shifted dramatically. Church that was once a place I thought everyone was welcome with all their baggage started to feel unwelcoming. The self-righteous people of faith spreading hate and one-sided truth, claiming to be holy, and even ordering people how to live in purity while themselves being scarred with sexual abuse and bigotry made it all to me so hypocritic and inauthentic that I literally turned away from my religion. And the Bible no longer spoke to me. I heard the words, I read the words, but they started to become stale. And it all left me so disconnected and so angry and frustrated and really alone. Because it's really not easy to believe in God when people tell you that God doesn't like you. And to prove their point, they quote the infamous Clobber passages. But what if these passages were misinterpreted? What if there is another, different way of reading the scripture? What if your queer stories were represented in the Bible? What if you can see your queer self in the Bible without making stuff up? Let me circle back to Father Shea, whom I quoted early in this episode. And he is a trans and a queer priest and the co-founder, along with Brian Murphy, of Queer Theology. The way they see Christianity and experience the scripture reading is truly visionary, because they see it and experience it in a different light. They queer the theology and they queer the Bible. Now, I was trying to paraphrase, or rather summarize, their concept of queering the theological scripture and, sorry, the theological space and scripture, but honestly speaking, I couldn't. So let me read a part of their newsletter I got several weeks ago that beautifully explains how to queer the space, how to queer this theological space, and how to queer the Bible. We're looking for our own stories in the text. We're looking for the places where the text speak to the experience of marginalized people. The idea of reading the Bible queerly is about giving people permission to bring whoever they are to the text and to figure out who they are in relation to the story. I think of the way that Jesus told his audience's parables, and one of the ways he used them was to get the audience to figure out who they were in the story. Queering the Bible doesn't mean looking for characters who are queer or trans. It means bringing all of ourselves to the text and allowing our unique ways of seeing the world inform how we read. It means seeing it in the scars of the resurrected body of Jesus, the holiness of transgender surgery scars. It means seeing LGBTQ+ prison justice in light of Jesus' statement that he has come to set the prisoners free. It means figuring out what Amos' words of justice rolling down like waters looks like for the modern queer and trans movement. It means the text still speaks to us, not as a rule book or a how-to manual, but as a living and breathing conversation about what it means to be marginalized and move in the world. It's how we learn what it means to follow Jesus in our own particular context. Wow. That was beautiful. That was beautiful, and that was so powerful, and it was so liberating. I must say it. After reading that newsletter, my whole perspective shifted around Bible and what I believe Bible was, or how the Bible was introduced to me when I was a kid. I understood Bible, as Father Shea mentioned in the newsletter, as a rule book or how-to manual. And many, many people until now understand Bible like that. But it's not about that. It's more than that. It's a living and breathing conversation about what it means to be marginalized and how to move in the world, finding ourselves in the stories, finding ourselves in the scripture, and understanding the context of what we are reading, seeing how God works through and with marginalized people, and understand what he's trying to tell us and see ourselves in those stories. It's mind-blowing. The moment you sit and start reading the Bible or the scripture, having that perspective in mind, things are changing, things are shifting. So I love the way Father Shea and Brian are so visionary when it comes to religion, spirituality, and reading the scriptures. But I do understand that not every queer wants to be a visionary or wants to change the world or take the risk of being different. However, I believe that every queer wants to be happy, wants to be fulfilled personally and professionally, wants to be loved, appreciated, and accepted. And I think it's all about the ability to embody your life's deeper purpose and do what you have been put on this planet to do. And it is to stand out. It is to break the status quo, to be different, to think different, and to see different. But what happens is that a lot of people, and that might include you, look at different things and see them as risky. What you need to understand is that what you see as risk is 100% subjective. Being an entrepreneur is risky. Getting on a plane is risky. Changing a job is risky. Saying I love you first is risky. So whatever you see as risky might not be risky to me or to your friend, and vice versa. What I see as risky to you probably might seem as normal. So whatever you view as risk is 100% subjective. Remember what I said about fear, that there are only two things we are afraid of? Falling and loud noises, and rest is basically indoctrinated. Now, same thing goes for risk. What our parents or culture or society viewed as risky, they have taken that and indoctrinated us in that belief that something is risky. So I'll just give you an example. I can come out because it's risky. Why would anyone want to come out? We are hated and rejected and judged, and it sucks. But how is it risky? You're gonna come out and people will pass on their judgment anyway. So just smile and walk away. Don't waste your time and energy on people who are not mentally mature enough to grasp the idea of different perspective. Or another example, I cannot be different because I won't fit in. And let me ask you again, how is that risky? Be different, because fitting in is so freaking backwards. It's a battle cry for love and acceptance according to other people's rules with no space for the real you. Don't be afraid to be different. You will repel those who are not worthy of your energy and attract the right people who's gonna effing love you. So whatever you see as risky is always subjective. It's a perspective. And the good news is you can always change your perspective. So let me give you an example so that it all comes into a full circle. And I heard that story on my mentor's podcast, and I thought it would be a great, great story to share with you today in this episode, because it's really talking about risk and how people, different people view risks and what fallouts that might create in your life. So Brandon, he has a friend who hated the job that he was at. He truly hated the job. He hated the boss. He hated the environment. He hated the culture. He hated how everything was done, old school. He basically hated everything about this. So when Brandon asked him why he was stuck at the job, his friend answered him and said, because it's risky to leave. But you know what? Days passed, and one day came when his friend got an offer for a new job. So he was super excited about it, but it was super risky to take it. So when Brandon asked him, are they paying you less? He said, no, they're paying me more. So is the commute longer? So his friend answered, no, it's closer to my home, so it's a shorter commute. Do you have to work more? And his friend said, no, I'll be working less. So Brandon got really confused. It was a bigger company offering a better job, closer to his home with less working hours. So how on earth is that a risk? Now, what Brandon realized was that his friend viewed the new job as a risk because of his model of perception. Brandon's friend viewed change as a risk. He viewed change as bad because he grew up in a household where he saw his parents freaking out when a major change was happening. So for him, any change was bad because any change involved or meant taking a risk. But risk is really a required component of creating something new. Look, no new technology or electric cars or startups were created without a risk, both risk of failing and risk of succeeding. And many times when people saying, I'm afraid of failure, they're not really afraid of failure. They're many times afraid of success. No new technology, nothing that changes the world, that shifts the world, was created without risk. Look at Wright Brothers. It has taken them years and countless trials before their first successful flight. And they have basically revolutionized the way of transport. We know it today, especially the modern transport we know it today. The air travel industry is one of the largest global industries, and it's worth $400 billion. It's freaking mind-blowing. But every time they went for the test flight, they knew they were risking. They knew they were risking not exactly a failure. They knew that things might not go as they wanted. And many times it did. Look, it took Thomas Edison 1,000 attempts to invent a light bulb. He basically brought light to the masses, just like the Prometheus in Greek mythology, who stole the fire from the gods and gave it to mortals. And there was light in every home, in every street, and in every building across the globe. It took him 1,000 attempts to figure it out. So 999 times, he was taking a risk of things not going well. Let me ask you another question. If you go to IKEA and buy furniture, and you basically just follow the steps, does that guarantee you will put it together perfect the first time with no mistakes? Probably not. Because every time you go to IKEA and buy a furniture, although they give you all the tools and give you the manual, you're also taking a risk that you're not gonna put it perfectly with no mistakes on the first attempt. You're probably gonna do it on the third, fourth, or fifth, right? And let me show you maybe another example just to nicely sum it up when it comes to risk. Now, many people are still afraid of taking a plane. And why is that? Is it really fear of heights? Or is it not being really in control of what is happening with the plane? Why many people don't like to take a flight, don't like to go on the plane? Because they see it as risky. Although it's proven that airplanes are the safest mode of transport in the world. There are more people dying in car accidents on the road every single day than in the plane crash. But many people still don't want to take a flight because they see it as risky. Although they know that a plane will get them quicker to their destination because it's the fastest way of transport and can move you from place to place, anywhere in the world, anywhere on the globe. And some people will still not get on the plane. But they're all missing the opportunity of seeing the amazing places, the jewels of the nature hidden somewhere in the middle, maybe of Pacific or Atlantic, and exploring different cultures and traditions and meeting different people. They're missing all of that because they see as taking a plane is risky. And they could have been traveling all over the world, seeing beautiful places, but not many people will get on the plane. So if you're a type of a queer that sees something as a risk, I want you to think about a couple of things. How can you change your perspective to look at more positive aspects of change and how things can benefit you versus the risk of staying where you are right now that causes you some kind of pain and suffering? And keep one thing in mind, that the more risk you take, the quicker it becomes something normal. Now, to wrap up this episode, there is something I want you to think about. Everything that surrounds you, the world that surrounds you, the external world, is a very powerful place. Because it's a place you want to fit into, and it's a place you want to be accepted in, and it's a place that quiets your voice and who you truly are. And you probably haven't even realized that the external world, the thing you are most afraid of, society, haters, homo and transphobes, and their norms you need to conform to, were created by people who are either leaders or visionaries. And being a queer visionary, you have this amazing opportunity to create a new, better external world. You get to design new rules, new norms, new reality, because your queerness is a gift. And you are the gift to the world, because you see and you experience the world differently. You were not born to fit in. You were born to stand out. Stand out with your queer message, following your queer purpose, and desire to create a change, to do something meaningful, and leave a legacy for generations of queers to come, regardless of the risk. Otherwise, rules, norms, beliefs, reality, the whole external world will continue to be created, taking only half of the society, the straight half, into consideration. So, are you the type of a queer who wants to be a visionary that changes the external world and creates a powerful change? Or are you the type of a queer that doesn't stand out because it's risky, holds back, and is just like everyone else? So this is what I'm gonna leave you with today. Give it a thought and let me know, who are you? My DMs are always open for conversation, so slide in and let's talk. Let's get social. Let me know too what you thought about this episode. Until then, my gorgeous queers, get out there, claim your space, and be the queer visionary you already are. I'll talk to you the next episode. Have a fantastic day.